All right, hey, we're in the book of Judges. It's been a couple of weeks since we all met, and for me personally, about 3 weeks since we were actually, since I was able to be in class and with you. So, just as a recap, we are in the middle of the story of Samson in Judges 15 and 16 is where we'll pick up our study this evening. Just as a memory jogger in way of review, you know, I loved Travis's talk this evening, speaking about everybody has a story. Well, not everybody has a story that's in the Bible, right? This guy, Samson, he's got quite an interesting story that as a kid was always one of my favorites. And as an adult, I find extremely fascinating all the things that we can learn from the story of Samson. So starting in chapter 13, we find is where the story of Samson picks up. And we won't spend too much time in review, but it's helpful for us all to kind of be on the right mindset. We find that Samson is the son of Manoah. His mother was barren at the time. And as is kind of a theme throughout the Bible, so we find this several times where a righteous woman is unable to have children, and God blesses her with one. And typically speaking, that child is a child of purpose, just like Samson. An angel appeared to her and promised her a son, and that son would be a Nazarite. Does anybody remember what the Nazarite code was? What did that entail? So, no haircut, no drinking, no grapes, okay? No womanizing. Well, he didn't do that very good. Right? Okay. So, Samson, but the purpose of the Nazarite was that somebody who was dedicated to the service of God. And for a special purpose, for sure. And that pretty much wraps up 13 in a nutshell. In chapter 14... Samson is then a young man, and he desires a wife. And we find in chapter 14 that he goes down to the Philistine village, finds a pretty girl, and comes back home and says, "Go get her for me." And and we find out there an interesting side note in chapter 14 in verse 4. What do we find out about Samson and his wife? What did God intend? God had a purpose in mind, right? It says in verse 4, "His father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord, for he was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines." I love history, passionate about history, and I find the unfolding of God's will throughout the Old Testament completely amazing to me. We see that the promise of Samson was that he would begin to redeem the people from, you know, the thumb of the Philistines, right? He would begin the process of bringing the people out of underneath of the Philistine strongness. And so we find that God had a purpose in mind, but it was a big picture. It wasn't a short-term time frame. So as he's going to get this wife, what happens along the way? Anybody remember? Yeah. And what's he do to the lion? He didn't just kill him. He ripped it to pieces with his own bare hands, right? Just crazy. We were in Arizona this last weekend, and we were talking with Megan's brother, Kevin. And he mentioned this dog called the Kangol. K-A-N-G-O-L. Look it up on Google sometime. These dogs are about this tall, and they're bred to fight off lions. And they're ferocious beasts. But a lion is just huge. I can't imagine, me being a large man, I can't imagine ever being able to fend myself off of a lion. Samson does it with his bare hands, and rips it to shreds like a young goat, he says, like you just tear apart a newborn anything. So it's pretty amazing. And then, you know, we don't, I kind of get the picture of Samson as not very smart sometimes. I don't know what your opinion of Samson is, but he doesn't display a lot of wisdom at times, but he's pretty sharp. Because when he gets to the wedding feast, what does he do to the Philistines around there? He gives them a challenge. What is this? He comes up with this unsolvable riddle, right? And for me, I think I'm kind of smart, but I don't think I could come up with a riddle like that on the spot. That's unsolvable, that only he could win, basically. And it's pretty interesting there. All right, so he gives him this unsolvable riddle. They eventually goad his new wife into helping them out, so they don't lose lose the bet, basically. And so after they win the bet, what happens? The end of 14. He goes down to some other village and kills 30 guys, takes their clothes to repay the bet, right? All right, that leads us into chapter 15, where we have another conflict with the Philistines. Now, Scott had mentioned this interesting cultural difference there. It was kind of interesting to find out that Samson was married to this gal, and yet they didn't live together. Apparently, the culture of that time in the Philistine culture was that the wife would stay within her father's household still. Because they weren't together. He goes to visit her. He goes to lie with her. And he says, well, father says, no, you can't do that. I gave her to somebody else. Right? I thought you truly hated her. Right? And how that must have really made Samson angry. Because he goes and he takes the time to collect 300 foxes. Which, you know, that would be a tale in and of itself. We don't have the details there. But he collects 300 foxes, and two by two, ties them up with torches and the light, and he destroys their entire crop during the wheat harvest with burning foxtails. So they, of course, get mad, and they don't come after Samson. They go kill his ex-wife and her father, and it's a tragic story. All right. After that, it's one of the big stories of Samson, right? Getting into 15 here, where are we going to pick it up here? Up. All right, so picking up in verse 9 of chapter 15. So after Samson lights all of the wheat on fire, the Philistines have retribution against his father-in-law and his wife, and he has a fight with them, these guys who killed his in-laws and his wife, and then he goes and kind of hides out in the cleft of a rock someplace. So, picking up verse 9, it says, then the Philistines came up and encamped in Judah and made a raid on Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why have you come up against us? They said, we have come up to bind Samson, do to him as he did to us. Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Edom and said to Samson, do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us? How many of you have ever done anything that required 3,000 people to come to you? Right? What kind of a man is this guy? 3,000 people of Judah come out to him. His reputation is tremendous. And I don't know, that's pretty amazing. You guys have any thoughts about that? All 3,000 people went down to this to get Samson. Right? Yeah. So what's Samson do? Let's pick it up there. Unlike Travis, I actually take my glasses off to read. All right, do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? And he said to them, as they did to me, so have I done to them. And And they said to him, "We have come down to bind you, that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines." And Samson said to them, "Swear to me that you will not attack me yourselves." They said to him, "No, we will only bind you and give you into their hands. We will surely not kill you." So they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. When he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting to meet him. Then the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became as flax that has caught fire. And his bonds melted off his hands, and he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, and put out his hand and took it. And with it he struck 1,000 men. And Samson said, "With the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, have I struck down 1,000 men." That's just amazing. We see all kinds of heroic stories of battles throughout the Bible. But this one has got to be one of the craziest and most interesting. You know, they make movies about things like this. I don't think they've made a movie about Samson. Have they made it? Is it too old for me? Okay. They ought to make a new one, because I would like to see that. I think it'd be great. All right, any thoughts up to this point about Samson and his epic fight against the Philistines? Please don't make me talk for 45 minutes. Paul, well, you smiled and looked at me. You have something to say. Go ahead. Well, I don't know. I kind of got the feeling that he had consummated his wedding, because they were there during the wedding feast for 7 days during this time of, I don't know. Does anybody else have any thoughts about that? I kind of thought he was married to her. He called her his wife. Yeah, because Scott alluded, or Scott or Travis had alluded that their understanding, it was a cultural difference for the Philistines, the tribe there, that the, I don't know, for a period of time, the newlywed bride would still stay in her father's household or something. So, not an expert on that. I can't say for certain. Ken? You have to wonder where all that stuff originated from, but we've seen, Bruce Lee movies and things like that, where he's fighting off hordes of individuals with his amazing martial arts prowess. But one man filled with God's holy might and a jawbone of a donkey kills 1,000 guys. I mean, it's just crazy. It can only be attributed to God. Yeah. Well, it was the Philistines that he killed. The 3,000 guys were from Judah, right? So, it's interesting. He's got 3,000 guys that deliver him to the Philistines, and he kills 1,000 of them. And, it's just crazy. And had they brought 3,000, he probably would have killed all of them. So it's just it's crazy. So we, yeah, no doubt about that. Heaps upon heaps have I struck down 1,000 men with a donkey. You know? It's really kind of gross to think about all the blood, guts, and you know, the reality of killing like that. But such is the, you know, the art of war, so to speak. That is a very good point. So we attribute a lot of poor choices to Samson, but in this case, Paul's right. He was definitely a righteous. Jake? That is interesting. Yeah, I he violates his Nazirite vow a lot. So. Get to his story with Delilah, he explains to her that he's been a Nazirite to God his entire life. I don't know. Maybe it was a special vow that God had with him. You know, we don't have all the details, so it's kind of left to fill in the blanks. Couple more verses, and I think we might answer that question here. Picking up in 17, it says, as soon as he had finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone out of his hand, and that place was called Ramath-Jehi. And he was very thirsty, and he called upon the Lord and said, you have granted this great salvation by the hand of your servant. Shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? And God split open the hollow place that is at Lehi, and water came out from it, and when he drank, his spirit returned, and he revived. Therefore, the name of that it was called En Hakore. It is at Lehi to this day, and he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. So, based on that, I kind of get the feeling that he probably knew that he was serving God. Calling on God, you've granted me this victory, and now I'm so worn out after fighting a thousand. I can only imagine how much work it was to kill 1,000 guys. You know, and he was probably completely famished. But he sounds a little whiny to me at the same time. I don't know. That's just me. But God blesses him and gives him water and refreshes him with that, and it's pretty amazing. Any thoughts at all through 15? Any comments about Samson the man, Samson the servant of God, Samson the judge? Thank you. Yeah, it's true. It's an interesting tidbit. The story of Samson is interesting. The way it kind of unfolds for us, because we don't have, there's so many details that aren't there for us. He calls out to God here, and he understands he has a relationship with God, I think. And he understands that his vow with God, being a Nazarite, God blesses him with this strength to do great works. I think that on the surface, at least, that we can be confident in all of those facts. But I don't know how much beyond that did Samson praise God, did Samson proclaim God, other than speak directly to him, as we read here at the end of the chapter. Oh, you're talking about in chapter 16.
Yeah.
You're jumping way ahead, Mike. All right. Let's jump into 16. I'd like to finish the story of Samson so that when Scott gets back, he can jump in the next story. All right. Chapter 16, I don't think we'll read the entire thing, but we can get the gist. Woman number two, at the beginning of 16, Samson went to Gaza, saw a prostitute, and went into her. The Gazites were told Samson has come here, and they surrounded the place and set an ambush for him all night. He avoids the ambush by getting up at midnight, and what did he do there? He arose and took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts, pulled them up, bar and all, put them on his shoulders, and carried them to the top of the hill that is in front of Hebron. What kind of a statement is that? Like, don't mess with me, I'm Samson, right? But, what's that? Yeah, I took the door with me, right? Don't let it hit you on the way out. But, in that time, what was the gate of the city? What did it represent? Right? So what did he do in one fell swoop? He made a big statement. Right? Big statement. You know, and it's almost like, you know, be glad I didn't do anything to you people. You know? All right. And that's all it says about that little incident. We don't have any more details. We don't know if they, you know, put their tails between their legs and ran away, or what happened. Other than he obviously knew that they were going to ambush him, and he just destroyed their gate and put it on top of his shoulders and walked to the top of the hill. That's just crazy. All right. After this, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. Right. Probably the most, the most infamous story about Samson is Samson and Delilah, right? Did he marry Delilah? Mike's saying no. Are you sure? Nope. We don't know. That's the answer. We have no idea if he married her or not. But what we do know is that he had great affection for her. It proves that once again, one of his biggest weaknesses was women. All right. So he loved this woman, Delilah. It says the lords of the Philistines came. Not a big mob of people. The lords, the leaders of the Philistine people came to Delilah, probably in secret. And what did they offer her? Fortune. I don't know how much 1,100 silver pieces was back in those days, but it sounds like a lot. And there wasn't just one lord. It doesn't say how many, but they were lords plural. So at least two, but more likely, you know, five or six probably. You know, I don't know how right? So she's, you know, each of them was going to give her 1,100 silver pieces if she did what? my son. What does he say? What does Solomon say to his son about women? All you women, I'm not insulting you. I'm just saying that men are prone to be extremely stupid where women are concerned. Right? That's just plain simple truth. Women have the ability to make all men stupid. And Delilah proves it with Samson, right? She, my mother-in-law and my mother are both chit-chatting now. I'm sure I'll hear something later. But it's the truth. And when men are advised time and time and time again, beware of you know, these type of women that are out there to, you know, to try to get at you. Now Delilah was essentially a paid assassin at this point. She was hired by these lords. She gave in a lot of money. And she's going to begin a long process of whittling him down until he finally gives up. Right? All right, so we have four pleas, P-L-E-A-S, of Delilah, and three lies by Samson, and one truth, right? During this whole chapter of 16, well, most a big chunk of 16, we find this give and take, right? Delilah's trying to get Samson to tell him the truth. He tells her a lie. It doesn't work for the Philistines, so on and so forth. So let's go through that and discover what we have here. Picking up in verse 6, chapter 16, verse 6. So Delilah said to Samson, "Please tell me where your great strength lies and how you might be bound that one could subdue you." Samson said to her, "If they bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, then I shall become weak and be like any other man." The lords of the Philistines brought up to her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now she had men lying in ambush in an inner chamber, and she said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he snapped the bowstrings as a thread of flax snaps when it touches the fire, so the secret of his strength was not known. All right. Was Samson completely ignorant and just dumb as an ox? Or do you think he was just kind of toying? He knew what was going on and was toying with her. Which one? What do you think? Think it was both? Right? Do you think he was just dumb and completely, right? Or do you think he was like, haha, watch this, right? I don't know. Depending on what day of the week I read this is how I come out on either side of that. Because sometimes it seems like Samson, he's just kind of completely oblivious, right? And he's so enraptured with Delilah that he'll do whatever she says. But he doesn't really want to give up his true secret, right? Maybe he was testing her. You know, I'd like to think he was kind of smart, you know? A good example for all mankind, but you know, I don't know. He might have been testing her, but we do know that he didn't give in to her until the end, right? All right. Any other observations about test number 1, 7? He's pretty ingenious at the beginning. 7 bowstrings, right? And then we'll go see what's next. Then Delilah, in verse 10, said to Samson, "Behold, you have mocked me and told me lies. Please tell me how you might be bound." And he said to her, "If you bind me with new ropes that have not been used, then I shall become weak and be like any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And the men lying in ambush were in an inner chamber, but he snapped the ropes off in his arms like a thread. So, episode number 2, new ropes, he says, new ropes. Well, fresh bowstrings didn't work, new ropes didn't work. Then Delilah, in verse 13, said to Samson, "And Till now you have mocked me and told me lies. Tell me how you might be bound. And he said to her, weave the 7 locks of my head with a web and fasten it tight with the pin. Then I shall become weak and be like any other man. So apparently he's got his hair in 7 locks. You know, I don't know if it's dreadlocks or how he had his hair, but he never cut it. And so she's supposed to, I guess, braid it together and pin it up. 7 braids. Okay. So I don't know. He just lets her do it. Right? He lets her tie him up with bowstrings. He lets her tie him up with the ropes. He lets him braid her hair. I mean, he obviously knows he's telling her a lie. Karen? Yeah, his creativity is slipping away. Or arrogance, yeah. I mean, it could just be that he's like, you know, no matter what you do, I'm always going to be Samson, the strong man, right? All right. Finally, the words no man ever wants to hear. If you really love me. Right, okay. So, guys, I'll close your eyes real quick. Women, how many times have you ever used this before? A quick survey. No? Oh, good. Yay. That's awesome. I don't believe a one of you. No, I'm just kidding. Right? It's the classic heartstring guilt trip, right? And if you really, how can you say you love me if you are just lying to me all the time and blah, blah, blah? All right. Verse 15. How can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me 3 times. You have not told me where your great strength lies. And when pressed hard with her words day after day and urged him, his soul was vexed to death. Does this remind you of any other verses in the Bible? Yep. So lots of lessons for men and women in this verse, I guess, you know, this text. Lots of things to do and not to do. But she, man, she just wore him down day after day after day, right? And finally, verse 17, he was vexed to death, and he told her all his heart and said to her, a razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. My head is shaved, my strength will be gone, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. But what happens next just boggles me. So he finally tells her his big secret, right? So when Delilah saw that he had told her all of his heart, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, come up again, for he's told me all his heart. They come up, brought the money in their hands. She made him sleep on her knees. She called a man and had him shave off his head. She must have drugged him or made him drunk. I don't know what happened here. But how can he possibly sleep through that, you know? So she must have done something. I'm just surmising. But I can't imagine that happening without his knowledge, without him being able to wake up and stuff. What do you guys think about that? Oh, well, maybe. But maybe she wore him out with more than her words. I don't know. But he was definitely asleep through it. And she had a guy come in and shave off his head. All right. Then she began to torment him. Poor guy. And his strength left him. And she said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And he awoke from his sleep and said, I will go out as the other time and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. The Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes, brought him down to Gaza. Really kind of a sad story, you know. woman he's probably not married to, he's been with her for a while, she wears him down, and she's just trying to get the money. You know, she wears him down finally, gouge out the guy's eyes, and it's just tragic. Jake? That's true. I don't know. But we kind of get the indication that God's strength wasn't always with him. He was with him when he needed it. Because it mentions that several times that God filled him during these moments. So I don't know. He expected God to fill him again for the fight. It didn't happen, obviously, and he lost for the first time. So, see, I don't know. He said to her that if you cut my hair, God, you know, God's strength will leave me. You know, so I don't know. He may not have realized his head had been shaved. I don't know. He woke up, going to fight, you know, and. So I don't know. Like I said, the details are not as fulfilling as detailed as we would like in all particulars. But we do know that she finally won. He gave in, and he became a slave and an obstacle of pretty awful stuff. All right, so they gouged his eyes out, brought him down to Gaza, bound him with bronze shackles, and he ground at the mill in the prison. The hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. So there he is, a prisoner, shackled to a mill in the prison, walking around in a circle, grinding wheat. And it seems to me, as we read on, that this was a common occurrence that they would bring him out to as a trophy. Let's read on there in verse 23. Now the lords of the Philistines gathered to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to rejoice. And they said, "Our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hand." And when the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, "Our God has given our enemy into our hand, the ravager of our country, who has killed many of us." And when their hearts were merry, they said, "Call Samson, that he may entertain us." They called Samson out of the prison, and he entertained them. They made him stand between the pillars. So, we know that God, at the beginning, said that Samson was going to be the beginning of the redemption of his people for the Philistines. He had a purpose for Samson, right? Samson made a huge reputation for him, but how this must have angered God. These people were so willfully against him. Samson was a symbol of these Philistines, of Dagon's superiority over God, Jehovah God. They trotted him out and said, "Our God's better than his God." And, yeah, Bob? I mean, he was shackled with iron. I kind of assume that he was shackled in prison. He was defeated and blind. You know, he must have been a miserable sight. Despite his hair, he obviously didn't have any strength left. Or otherwise, he would have broken out and started killing people again. Right? So, you know, I don't know how long this went on, but it was obviously a fairly long time, I would gather, that they would trot him out and say, "Hey, look, the ravager of our people, our god Dagon's better than his god is." Right? And we see just another example of why God, you know, hated idolatry, hated the acts of these people and why he wanted them to be punished and wanted retribution against his people. All right. Any other comments about that? Going on. In verse 26, Samson said to the young man who held him by the hand, "Let me feel the pillars on which the house rests, that I may lean against them." Now get this. The house was full of men and women. All the lords of the Philistines were there. And on the roof, there were 3,000 people. What kind of a house was this? I mean, can you imagine this building alone, if it had a flat roof? Maybe 1,000 people. Maybe 1,000 people. Our entire church building, right? We uncomfortably hold about 310 in here. That's what people kind of really snuggling together a little bit, right? That's in the auditorium. We could probably fit 500 people here if it was standing room only. But 3,000 people on the roof, right? It's just I mean, the large scale of this dwelling was just amazing. Then Samson called to the Lord and said, "O Lord God, please remember me and please strengthen me only this once, O God, that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes." And Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested, and he leaned his weight against them, his right hand on the one, his left hand on the other. And Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he bowed with all his strength, and the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people who were in it. So the dead whom he killed in his death were more than those whom he had killed during his life. Then his brothers and all his family came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had judged Israel for 20 years. Crazy end to Samson's life, but at the end, what did he find? The opposite of what Karen was talking about. He found humility, right? Finally found some humility to humble himself before God and to seek God's help one more time, right? All right, before we wrap up here, considering the big picture of Samson's life and his story, what lessons can we learn for us today? Anything just kind of jump out at you as general lessons or rules or principles or things we can take away from the story of Samson? Why is it here for us? Definitely shows God's power. God can work great things through one individual.
Right?
That is a great lesson. You guys all hear that? You may go astray, but God is merciful, and you can always come back. Right? Big amen for that. One of the first things that I wrote down was God will use all types. Right? Mike? I wonder, though, if he did fulfill his purpose by doing exactly what he did. Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, at the end of the day, Sarah's right. When we look back upon Samson's life, he was a warrior for God. He acted in faith at the end, for sure. So. Men, watch out for it. out for men. No, you know, one of the things we can learn about Samson, his weakness, his penchant for women, things like that. All of us, hey, I got 3 minutes in this clock. Why do you need 2 bills? We all have weaknesses. And no matter who you are, whether it's Delilah, somebody else in your life, Satan is going to use circumstances in your life to exploit your weaknesses. And so we need to make sure we know what our weaknesses are and try to defend against them. So, all right, thanks everybody for a good class. We'll see you next week.